What Makes a Potter? Functional Pottery in America Today by Janet Koplos, a book review by Owen Rye. I opened the book after receiving it in the mail, the equivalent of you picking it up in a bookshop and looking through it. My first thought was this is an echo of Jerry Williams' extensive interviews with potters for Studio Potter magazine. Here are 50 interviews with potters, following a short introduction and raison d'etre by Koplos. As the subtitle says, it's a book about useful pottery, mostly what used to be known as domestic ware, for use with food and drink, the kind of pottery where the product is described as a plate, or a bowl, or a mug and has no need for fancy titles. A flick through with a closer look here and there reveals potters talking about their lives in plain language. There are no signs of art speak. That is an excellent beginning, suggesting that the book is readable. It's a book mainly of words, not pictures, although there is a black and white portrait of each potter, and a single page of color images illustrates their pots, but the interviews are about their lives and their decisions, not about their pots. Potters discuss how they came to be where they are, doing what they are doing. It's a why would you do it book, not a how do you do it book. I was immediately reminded of an Australian television program titled Front Up that ran from 1994 to 2004 on the SBS channel. In it, Andrew Urban did street interviews with randomly chosen strangers, illustrating his premise that everyone has an interesting story to tell. Every interview in the Koplos book reveals something about the person and often offers something unexpected for anyone who knows about them but does not know them personally. Mary Barringer, in her interview in the book, refers to Studio Potter magazine, which she edited some time ago. It's really not about the object, it's about the mind of the maker. So too is this Koplos book. It's definitely not about critique, or art theories, or art movements, or whatever is fashionable. I love the approach, letting people speak for themselves. I could be chastised, justifiably perhaps, for my view that critics and reviewers of ceramics often either wallow in art speak or attempt to fit the art into their pre-existing mindset. I have no reservations about wishing to know, and perhaps understand the maker. Life stories are always intriguing, and this book is unique in providing so many of them. It presents us with what the 50 potters have said, as they have said it. They speak for themselves, and that is the source of the pleasure I have had and will continue to have from it. I'd like to say this book is the best of its kind, but as far as I know, it's the only one of its kind. The highest praise I can offer is to say that it's readable, and enjoyable as well as informative because of that. How many people do you know who admit to looking through the images in magazines but neglecting to read the unreadable words? Now for the confession I have been holding back. It is considered sinful for a reviewer to review a book he or she has not read. Well, minus I have not read this one cover to cover, I have read the Koplos introduction and some of the interviews. It's not a cover to cover kind of book and, he says somewhat defiantly, it's definitely not necessary to read it all to write a review. Each interview is self-contained and does not need any context to appreciate. Besides, it's far too rich a feast to be consumed by reading from cover to cover. It's not just a double yoker, it's almost a triple. It will bring the most pleasure if occasionally taken up to read what one person has said, followed by thinking about that for a while. The diversity of pathways into the role of potter is fascinating, and this book is the best source for revealing that diversity. It's clearly the product of a long period of intensive work. The potters included are entirely from the USA, which does not make it any less interesting for non-US readers. My wish is that someone familiar with this book will emulate one of my former colleagues. He recognizes a good idea when someone else has one, and be moved to do an international version. If so, may I suggest that the choice of people should not just be made from potters who have an existing high profile, but should concentrate more on people who have something captivating to say, a fascinating story to tell. A hard luck story can sometimes be more moving than a success story. Warren McKenzie inspired many potters, and now can take some credit for inspiring Koplos to undertake this project, since she heard him lecture during her studies at journalism school. He later became the subject of her first published interview. An early job introduced her to many Minnesota potters. Eventually, with the idea of producing a book of interviews, she talked to 160 potters and finally edited the results down to 50. My experience of deciding who to include in a book and who to leave out tells me it can be a tricky diplomatic exercise. I was surprised that Koplos left out some I would have thought essential to include. But it's her book, her choice, and that's the end of the matter, she explains the process of editing in her introduction. Her real problem was attempting to cut down the 300,000 words she had to a publishable 100,000. The end result is so polished and refined that the agonies of that effort are far from obvious. In her introduction, Koplos discusses the issue of terminology, ceramist, potter and all that. She says a potter is someone who makes utilitarian work, and later that the love of matter is a defining factor in working with clay. Anyone who makes pots for practical use with food or drink would agree. Other discussion gives insight into why anyone would make objects by hand in an age of cheap industrial production. The diversity possible is one reason among others. Indirectly, because the issue is not discussed in the IS book, a distinction is made between potters who make work that is intended to be used with food or drink, and people who use clay to produce artwork that fits into the general milieu of other art forms. This distinction has always existed, of course. The clay-based versions of the Venus of Willendorf, or the figurines of Meissen, were intended for ritual or decorative ends and clearly had no role in dining. It's most refreshing to find a book that focuses on practical everyday pottery in a context where most books about ceramics focus entirely on the art styles. Koplos begins the interview section with a discussion of some influential American potters: Turner, Carnes, Woodman, Click, Mackenzie, Temple, Bringle, Simon, and Illion. But I am pleased to say, she later does not just include interviews with the best-known potters but also includes some of the quieter people who are less inclined to look for recognition. The chapter titled Why Handmade Pots is Worthwhile Reading for Anyone, whether hobbyist or professional, involved in making pots for use. It is a thoughtful, well-considered and insightful essay that would be appreciated also by collectors and curators. It set me off thinking about the current trend in Australia for restaurants to use handmade tableware, with several potters specializing in such wares. Another discussion is about the customer having a wide choice, because each potter makes distinctive ware. Everyone can find something that suits their taste. In my house, I take that into account when visitors call. They are asked to select from a display of my collection of mugs, for their coffee or tea. It's always interesting for me to see who chooses what, and what that says about them. Koplos observes that pots for use are not only for ordinary meal times but also extend into refined and ritualistic uses such as the Japanese tea ceremony. In the chapter titled How to Read a Pot, Koplos begins by quoting Shirley Johnson, an English professor turned potter who said the simple approach to criticism is to answer the question minus what do you see? I respectfully disagree with concentrating solely on the visual. Pots appeal to all the senses, touch, sound, smell, some pots anyway. The visual aspect alone is an inadequate approach for discussing pottery intended to be picked up, passed around or held while contemplating something else. The sense of touch is an essential element of appreciation. I used to tell students that the best way to evaluate a coffee mug was to shut your eyes and pick it up. That's how I go about buying them. If it feels right, and 99% do not feel right in my hand minus although different ones would feel right to you minus then I have a look at it, and if it looks okay I buy it. You go on holding them long after you stop looking at them. Sound is a more subtle but ever-present aspect of pots. We have all heard the clunk of porous earthenware and the ting of porcelain. Still, the chapter is worth reading for what it does say about appearance, such as the observation that increasing access to colorants has meant increasing use of color. That was the long review. The short review is, get it, read it slowly. taken one person at a time. My favorite book review of all time, in the Melbourne Age newspaper, said in full, "I cannot think of anything bad enough to say about this book." Koplos's book had entirely the opposite effect on me. I can only think of good things to say, I cannot think of anything bad to say about it. You have been listening to a book review of What Makes a Potter, Functional Pottery in America Today by Janet Koplos. Reviewed by Owen Rye.